Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by the members of our Committee on Ministry, Mike Hovancic, Eric Van Bars, Shana Steinhaus, and Amanda Rome, who are helping to lead our service this morning. I'm also joined in welcoming you by our music director, Hal Walker, and the members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent Choir, and a cast of leaders from our religious education program, our interim director of religious education, Karen Labracco, incoming settled director of religious education, Lily, and our religious education coordinator, Colleen.
From John F. Kennedy, the Chinese use two brushstrokes to write the word crisis. One brushstroke stands for danger, the other for opportunity. In a crisis, be aware of the danger, but recognize the opportunity. We light this chalice this morning with a prayer for the wisdom to be open to both.
So many transitions and changes in this congregation. So many. Many of you are ending a summer vacation, and in a couple of weeks or a couple of days or maybe even a couple of hours are going back to work or to school. I'm also in a state of transition. I'm here for a couple very busy days, and on Wednesday I begin as the interim director of faith development at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Amherst, New York. So, that reminds me, I need some help in getting ready for that. I think maybe I need to call a friend because, you know, I really need some help here. I know, you don't have to mention this. We don't usually do this, but for today, I really need some help. So, I'm hoping.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to have my phone on. Hello, Karen.
Hi, Lily. I know your intent, and this is your first day as Director of Religious Education. Would you mind helping me out here? Could you help me out with the time for all ages?
Why, sure. I'll be happy to. Just a minute.
Thanks so much. Thanks. Well, you know, Lily, it's been great. I've known you for a couple of years through the Guild of Interim Religious Educators. And then this summer in June, we were at Columbus, Ohio for General Assembly together. That was great. And we also serve on the board of the Liberal Religious Educators Association. So this is good. So let me be one of the first to welcome you to Kent.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to being here and working here and to meet everyone. I did have a chance to meet several folks when I was at GA, and it was a wonderful experience. So I'm so happy to hear that I'm coming and following you. I heard that you're leaving soon to go to Amherst, New York, to be the Director of Faith Development, the interim director.
I am. And you know, leavings are hard, and I always try to take with me something really special from every place that where I've been. So I've got this bag of some of the really special things.
Me too. So I have my bag of things that I'm taking with me here to Kent. Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that I carry from me, because I grew up not far from here. Uh-huh. I came in from Akron, Ohio. That's where I grew up. So wherever I go, I bring this picture of a very special friend of mine who also left town and came back a while ago.
Yes.
It makes me feel really happy to know that we can come back home and be very well appreciated.
Oh, golly, good. Well, you know, I sometimes need something to help me kind of reflect on when you keep going, you know, where who I am, where I'm going. And so I have this mirror, and that kind of helps. But, you know, there's always questions when you ask, where am I going and what am I doing? So I keep asking that question.
And I'm prepared for that as well. Ooh. I always carry this book with me, 100 questions that non-members ask about Unitarian Universalists, because you never know when people get anxious and they don't have the right questions to ask. You know, for instance, is there a God?
She's good. All right, yeah. All right. But, you know, I found sometimes people like to find their own answers. You know, even if they might change, they want to find their own.
And I'm ready for that, too. Wherever I go, I carry this book of answers. And the trick here is you have to find your own answer for yourself. You know, like, will I have fun today? Investigate and then enjoy it.
Ooh, all right. Well, you know, this congregation has been really helpful for me in figuring out, in answering a lot of those questions that I had. Now, in that book, I bet you there's a question, you know, how many Unitarian Universalists can you fit in a small space? And I found out, you know, did you know that in what is now our new storage room upstairs, but used to be the senior high room, we would routinely fit at least a dozen youth and two or three adults in a space that is 12 by 8. Mm-hmm. But, and the nursery, I can't tell you how many times it's been chock full of these most adorable babies and toddlers, and then all the people that have to take care of them, too. Yeah.
Seems like they know how to keep physically close.
Oh, yeah, physically close is what this place knows. But there's more to it, Lily. This place is spiritually close.
I can see that this is a group of lovely, loving, and joyful people who really believe in having an open mind, helping hands, and a loving heart. It reminds me that about this mask that I made back in one of our youth group classes. It was made of my own face, and it reminds me not to mask my feelings, but to be open and honest with my feelings. It was a bit messy project, but it was a lot of fun to make.
Yeah, fun and messy is right up my alley, you know? And that reminds me a lot of Hogwarts and the magic that comes with that. Let me try a little bit. Abracadabra, creative, help needed, abracadabra. Ta-da!
Wow, that is magical.
It is. Oh, boy.
Well, I just so happen to have something for you. It's a big thank you card. Big thank you card for all that you've taught me this year. Thank you, Karen.
Oh, thank you.
And I have something for you, too. It's an official name tag.
Oh.
So that everyone will know who you are and be able to welcome you.
Thank you.
I'm so excited to collaborate with you this year.
Me too.
Oh, fabulous. Well, Colleen, you know, you are stepping into a new role here, and I have this book for you, Rejoice Together, Prayers, Meditations, and Other Readings, because I think you're just going to be doing more and more of that kind of stuff.
Thank you.
Oh,
and I also have a present for you, Colleen. Clay paint pot that we made into chalices at my old congregation. So I took one, and this one isn't yet painted, so I thought that together our work is going to be very colorful and we'll be able to paint such chalices together.
Thank you. I love that idea.
Oh, and Karen, before you leave, I also have a gift for you. This necklace was made and given to me by when I was at the junior high con at my old congregation. So it's got a chalice on the front, and it'll remind you that the light and of light and truth is always be with you no matter where you go.
Oh. She's so highfalutin, philosophical. And here I have for you the keys. All right, now these keys are very conveniently labeled with each door that they open. So these are the keys for you.
Boy, there's so many of them.
Yes, there are. But I'm saving here for the last, the very most important key here, because this is the key. If you kind of look carefully here, It's got a heart on it. This is the key to the hearts of all these wonderful people. I was given this key, and I pass it on to you.
Thank you, Karen.
And before you leave, Karen, we have a gift from the whole congregation to you to thank you for your service here with us this last year. We have made a donation to the Endowment Fund of the Liberal Religious Educators Association in your name.
Gratitude. Thank you so much. That is very dear to my heart. Thank you.
Whoever you are, we welcome you. But it would really help if you looked at our policy on disruptive behavior first. Yes, our church has a policy, and it's 3 pages long. Now, admittedly, I didn't read it or even know of its existence until I became a member of the Committee on Ministry. But it begins like this. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent strives to be an inclusive community, affirming our differences in beliefs, opinions, and life experiences. However, concern for the safety and well-being of the congregation as a whole must be given priority over the privileges and inclusion of the individual. To the degree that disruptive behavior compromises the health of this congregation or violates the spirit of our covenant, our actions as people of faith must reflect this emphasis on security. Now, I rationally understand such guidelines, and I assume that I can reflect an emphasis on security. I believe that good intuition and common sense will prevail in any situation where I would need to provide safety to myself and or my community. But lately, with the world seemingly less and less safe, I wonder what I would have done if faced with individuals in crisis in communities such as Charleston, San Bernardino, Baton Rouge, Orlando, Munich, or Nice. Everything we do in community and faith operates under both an assumption and a foundation based on our collective safety. When any person's physical and or emotional well-being or freedom to safely express beliefs is threatened, the fragile art of hospitality we so courageously strive to practice is strained. Just like our policy, today's service is not intended as a strict procedural outline, but rather to examine our collective and individual responses in creating a welcoming environment while caring for both the community and individuals in crisis. Let us explore what would you do together. Let us practice the fragile art of hospitality together.
Our wisdom words this morning come from Dr. Brené Brown, a social worker that does qualitative research on vulnerability, shame, and compassion. This is from her book, Rising Strong. I had discovered from my research that the most compassionate people have the most well-defined boundaries. They assume that other people are doing the best they can, but also ask for what they need, and they don't put up with a lot. This doesn't mean that we stop helping people set goals or that we stop expecting people to grow and change. It means that we stop respecting and evaluating people based on what we think they should accomplish and start respecting them for who they are and holding them accountable for what they're actually doing. It means that we stop loving people for who they could be and start loving them for who they are. It means that sometimes when we're beating ourselves up, we need to stop and say to that harassing voice inside, man, I'm doing the very best I can right now. I would like to recount a story from my professional life. As many of you know, I work in a public library. Public libraries are welcoming to all, and as such, we see all sorts of things happen. So I've dealt with many different situations in my professional life, ranging from minor injuries occurring in the library, which happens very frequently, to major crimes needing police involvement and requiring me to personally pick someone out of a lineup. This story, though, is a more typical event. Something that happens with regularity and needs a certain amount of finesse for it to work well. Someone got angry. That happens all the time, everywhere. And they did something they shouldn't have. The exact situation is not really important, but a patron became upset with an employee and swore at her and flicked her off in front of witnesses. Now, our patron behavior policy is a very specific document. It states, you may be asked to leave the library if you engage in behaviors that include, and it gives a long list of things. One of the behaviors listed is disrespect of staff and patrons. Behaviors include, but are not limited to, abusive, profane, vulgar, threatening, or excessively loud language or gestures. So, the patron in this particular situation had used profane language and gestures and was clearly in violation of the policy. She used profane language and gestures as she was leaving, so we had to decide what we would do in the event that she came back into the library that day, as is her habit. This patron is a daily library user and sometimes visits on multiple occasions throughout the day. After discussing whether this patron had had any type of problem before, the low severity of the situation, and the fact that the patron had a son that loves the library, we decided that we would not ask her to leave if she returned, but that we did need to make our boundaries clear. When you work with the public, you know that there is a certain amount of behavior that you will come across that you'd really rather not experience. Having worked in a variety of public service positions, I have seen many different styles of handling these incidents. As a supervisor, there's no flow chart, though that would be nice, for dealing with these things when they come up. It would be nice if I could clearly discern, if A and B happen, then I do C. But if A and not B, then I do D. But we all know that human interactions are not that simple. So what do? We have clear boundaries, and we let people know when they break them and what the consequences will be. So when this patron returned the next day, I went with another supervisor and asked to speak with her in a place away from other patrons. We chose to do it in a quiet space away from others to limit embarrassment. We also checked our own emotional involvement. The other supervisor with me was emotionally involved, as it was her supervisee that had been sworn at. So I decided to handle the interaction because I had no emotional connection to the situation. I started the conversation by acknowledging the patron's frustration and letting her know more about our workflow so that she would understand how we work and would not be frustrated in the future. I then told her that we did need to let her know that the behavior was unacceptable per our patron behavior policy. I then handed her a copy of the policy, which was highlighted. The patron argued about what had actually happened and complained of the behavior of staff. At this point, I wondered if there was something else at play, because her recounting of the situation in no way reflected what multiple witnesses had reported the day before. However, I didn't engage in arguing on this point. I told her that we would take care of things on our end with staff, and I refocused on her behavior. I ended by telling her that we want her to feel welcome at the library, but we all need to be on the same page. She continued her visit, checked out, and since then, I've had many positive interactions with her. She continues to visit the library on a daily basis and has not been disruptive or rude since.
Gracious Spirit of life and of love, I pray this moment not for any particular thing, but rather simply, like the oceans receiving the rain, just to be open. Let me be open to this moment to this day, to this life and all its beauty and all its challenge. Let me be open. Let me notice. Let me notice the next right step I can take. Let me listen for your call guiding me on. Let me be open. Let me notice. Let me listen. And teach me to follow where love leads. Amen.
Our second challenging story comes from the First Unitarian Universalist Church of New Orleans. And you've heard this story before from Reverend Melissa. Right around this time, in the middle of a quiet moment of prayer and meditation, a member of an anti-abortion group stood up and began hurling verbal assaults at the congregation. Soon, others joined with her, yelling that the church was not a true faith. You've never heard that before, I'm sure. Exhorting members to repent. So how do you think these UUs responded? Well, it was the church's youth who began. They raised their voices in song, bringing the congregation together, and they formed a ring around the sanctuary. They sang Circle Round for Freedom, and they sang other sustaining songs. Soon it became clear who was choosing to be beloved community and who was trying to destroy it. The minister asked the leader of this group and her fellow interlopers to leave the sanctuary if they could not participate respectfully. So that woman responded, "But you said all are welcome here. You said all are welcome here." The minister replied, "You are welcome here. If you can worship with us respectfully. If you cannot be respectful, you are respectfully invited outside the threshold of this sanctuary." And it wasn't just the sanctuary that was being violated. While that ruckus was unfolding inside, other people from this group stood outside the church shouting and pressing grotesque abortion pictures against the windows of the church's nursery. So how do you think these UUs responded? The adults in the nursery simply stepped up in front of the windows and they blocked the view.
So here's a true story for you. A group of seminary students were sitting down to take their exams. But they were given the following instructions: hurry and take your exam, and then we need you to rush across campus to another lecture hall where there will be some other activities for you. So each student would finish their exam and then be in a big hurry to get across campus. However, on that pathway between those two buildings, there was a homeless man who was crumpled to the ground, pleading for help, and he appeared to have some sort of medical issue. What would you do? This guy needs help. You're in a hurry. What these seminary students didn't know was that the homeless man was actually an actor. He was part of a social psychology experiment. How do you think the seminary students did? The majority did not stop to help the man. In fact, the biggest predictor of their behavior was how much of a hurry they were in. Those that were the most hurried only stopped 10% of the time. The most interesting part of the study to me was knowing what the seminary students were learning at the time. They were learning the story of the Good Samaritan. Biblical story about the importance of helping people in need. So essentially, these seminary students were rushing past a man in need in order to continue their studies about the importance of stopping to help people in need. And these are people who are studying to be ministers, people who we might hold to a higher moral standards than we would hold even ourselves. But before we judge them, please allow me to complicate matters even further. Imagine that the problem that any of us encounter involves somebody who's disruptive or threatening. Would that change your thinking? We shared some scenarios today in this service One was about a disruptive person in a public library. Another was about people inflicting their religious values on a church that was not their own. Each time, I hope that you thought about what you might do in that situation. The answer that you come up with to that question tells us a lot about you. The world is an incredibly complex place, and we actually need some kind of mental shortcuts to make sense of it. So we develop, each of us, our own unique set of core beliefs. That's why three people can witness the same incident and describe it very differently, attach very different meaning to it. Cognitive science suggests that in these kind of moments, that there's a continuum, there's a line, and on one end is compassion. And on the other extreme end is safety. And we have to decide where on that continuum we fall. And we do that by consulting our core beliefs. But where do these core beliefs come from? Well, again, consulting cognitive science. It appears very likely that a lot of this comes from the kind of parenting we received, whether it was authoritarian parenting or nurturing parenting, and to what degree of between those two. I would argue that in addition to this, it's how much we identify with or rebel against that parenting style. This is why my brother can be a Trump supporter while I could be standing in a UU church talking about compassion. This perspective shapes our worldviews. In fact, imagine that same continuum, but just replace the words, and it remains the same. So rather than just compassion and safety, it could be progressive, conservative, nurturing, authoritarian, rehabilitative, punitive, liberal, conservative. Turn the other cheek, an eye for an eye. In-depth analysis, gut reaction. Our liberal religious tradition challenges us to lean toward compassion on this continuum. Why? Because fear is the prison of the heart. Fear blocks our ability to have compassion, and it triggers a very kind of unthinking primal fight or flight response. It discourages the community building that we actually need, ironically, to be safe. This sermon topic emerged when the question came up in the Committee on Ministry about what would we do if somebody walked into one of our services and disrupted it. How would we do that while still being consistent with our values and beliefs? If you lean too far toward compassion, you might allow the loudest voices to run the church. If you lean too far in the other direction, you might be roughing up somebody who's perhaps confused or ill or offering an alternate opinion on things that could be useful to us. So how do we decide where to put ourselves on that continuum? We certainly have the guideline of respecting the inherent worth and dignity of all people. And earlier you heard a description of our disruptive person policy, and it's an attempt to find a balance that does lean more compassionate, but with firm, healthy boundaries. So to illustrate this idea, I'm going to end with a story that is really wonderful. It's a story called Aikido in Action by Terry Dobson, and in the interest of time, I'll summarize most of it and just read the end. So Terry Dobson was studying Aikido, that's a martial art, in Japan. And the concept of Aikido is that you're learning a martial art. You're learning a physical set of skills that you can use to dominate a person. And yet the highest standard of Aikido is that you use love and compassion rather than violence to settle things. And that it's actually a failure if you resort to the physical. And yet, one day, Terry was on a train in Japan. The doors open, and a large, very drunk, very agitated man got on. The man was yelling. He took a swing at somebody. He kicked at a woman with a baby. He was yelling incomprehensibly, dirty, clearly out of control. A hazard to everybody on that train car. Again, what would you do? This is what he did. Terry stood up, and that's where I'll pick up the reading. Seeing me stand up, the drunk recognized his chance to focus his rage. Aha, a foreigner, you need to learn some Japanese manners. I held on tightly to the commuter's strap overhead and gave him a slow look of disgust and dismissal. I wanted to take this man apart. But he had to make the first move. I wanted him bad, so I pursed my lips and I blew him an insolent kiss. All right, you're going to learn a lesson, he said as he gathered himself to rush at me. In a split second before anything could happen, however, someone shouted, "Hey! Hey!" It was ear-splitting, but I remember the seemingly strange, joyous, lilting quality. I wheeled to my left, and the drunk wheeled to his right, and we both stared down at a little old Japanese man, well in his 70s, sitting there, immaculate in his kimono. He took no notice of me, but he beamed delightfully at the laborer, as though he had a most important, most wonderful secret to share. "Come here, come here, come here and talk to me." The big man followed as though he were on a string. He planted his feet belligerently in front of the old gentleman and roared above the clacking of the wheels, "Why the hell should I listen to you anyway?" The drunk now had his back to me. If his elbow moved as much as a millimeter, I'd drop him in his socks. The old man continued to beam. "What you been drinking?" he asked, his eyes sparkling. "I've been drinking sake," he said. Speckles of spittle spattered the old man. "Oh, that's wonderful. Simply wonderful. You see, I like sake too. Every night, me and my wife, she's 76, you know, we warm up a little bottle of sake, and we take it out into the garden, and we sit on our old wooden bench, and we watch the sun go down. We look at how our persimmon tree is doing. My great-grandfather planted that tree, and we worry about whether it will recover from the ice storms we had last year. Our tree is doing better than I expected, though, especially when you consider the poor quality of the soil. It's gratifying to watch as we take our little bottle of sake into the empty evening, even when it rains." As he looked in the drunk man's eyes, his own eyes were twinkling merrily. The drunk staggered to follow the old man's monologue as he slowly began to soften and his fist began to unclench. "Yeah, I love persimmons too." "Yeah, and I'm sure you have a lovely wife too." "No, my wife died," said the drunken man. And very gently, slowing with the motion of the train, the big man began to sob. "I don't got no wife, I don't got no home, I don't got no job. I'm so ashamed of myself." And the tears rolled down his cheeks as a spasm of despair ripped through his big body. And now it was my turn, standing there in my well-scrubbed youthful innocence with my "Make the World Right for Democracy" righteousness. I felt suddenly dirtier than he was. Then the train arrived at the stop and the doors opened. I heard the old man cluck sympathetically. "My, my, my. Very difficult predicament. My, my. You come here. You come here and tell me about it." I turned my head for one last look as I stepped off the train. The drunk man was sprawled on the seat, his head on the old man's lap, the old man stroking his filthy, matted hair. "My, my, my, you tell me about it. Such a difficult predicament. You tell me." As the train pulled away, I sat down on a bench. What I'd wanted to do with muscle was accomplished with kind words. I had just seen Aikido used in combat, and the essence of it was love. I would have to practice the art with an entirely different spirit from this day forward.
The purpose of the church is to build beloved community. And we who call this place home come week after week to remind ourselves of the highest values we have chosen to help us be participants in building beloved community. We don't all have the same values, but the ones that we hold, we try to figure out how to live, not just when times are good, but also when times are hard. And this community is here to help encourage us to keep practicing. Holly Neer is a singer-songwriter, and I heard her at a concert once introduce a song with a story about how she learned something about practicing her values in public. She was walking down a street and she saw a couple rushing, holding a baby, 3 years old, toddler, and they were in a hurry. And the toddler was not going as fast as the parents wanted them to as they strode across the street. And so the parents do what some parents do when they're frustrated and stressed. They reached out and smacked the child. And Holly Neer, standing there on the street with some friends, saw this happen and was shocked and struck silent. She had no idea what to do to live her values in this moment. But across the street and a little ways down, there was a man with long dreadlocks, dressed in kind of Rastafarian type clothes, who saw this incident too. And he stepped out into the street and he began dancing. This beautiful, soft, gentle dance. And he began singing to the parents with his hands over his heart, "Don't hit the baby. Don't hit the baby." And it softened the parents. And it taught a lesson to Holly Neer and her friends. There's always a way, even in the most challenging of situations, for us to live our values in public, even when it's hard. So let this community be a place where we remember what they are, an encouragement to practice.
Oh,
We have a calling in this world. We are called to honor diversity, to respect differences with dignity, and to respectfully challenge those who would forbid it. We are a people of a wide path. Let us be wide in affection and go our way in peace.